The White House recently put out what it calls the loudest, clearest alarm bell to date on climate change. Its new report says global warming is a factor in changing weather from heat waves to bad allergy seasons. Much of the data supplying the national climate debate is housed by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Tom Carl is director of NOAA's National Climatic Data Center, and he joins us now to talk about it. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Emily. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. So first of all, just give us a sense of what the data center is. Describe its scope and the data that it houses.
Well, the data center actually began in 1951 as the weather observations across the nation were being taken in the 30s and into the 50s. It was realized that this data was important and we wanted to save it. So there was a number of regional collection centers that eventually consolidated in Asheville in 1951. And eventually, in the early 60s, a World Weather Record Center was established by Congress. Asheville, North Carolina, its location. That's where we're headquartered. We have a number of footprints across the country. We've got a number of regional climate service centers and directors in six regions across the country. We've got some research people at various places around the country, the University of Wisconsin and Washington, D.C. We've got a paleoclimate unit in Boulder, Colorado, that looks at and collects data that can reconstruct the history of the climate back thousands and thousands of years ago. But here in Asheville, where we preserve the data, we analyze it, we assess it, we monitor the climate, we have, and it's growing every day, over 15 petabytes of data. Our mission is to really be the nation's trusted authority on climate and weather information. We look at the data from a scientific perspective to ensure what data we have, we understand, and it's as good as possibly could be. Provide the stewardship for the data, make sure it's here for future generations to analyze, and provide a number of services in terms of delivering data. Last year, we delivered over 5 petabytes of data, much of that being satellite data, 3.6 petabytes of satellite data, but also data collected from traditional weather stations, ocean observing stations, radar data, and model data that's become increasingly popular. People interested in taking a look at what the models have to say.
So it's safe to say you're not running any of the core memory from 1951 anymore.
No, and it was amazing. We had punch cards across the entire building that we used to be in, so many punch cards that, in fact, did structural engineering damage to the building. Major effort in the 60s and early 70s to move those punch cards to tape. And today, of course, much of it is electronically available. But we still use tape, much different from the tape that was used back in the 70s, our robotic systems today, for some of the data that isn't used as frequently as contained on those robotic systems.
All right, so your strategic plan, just in the short term, say now through June, you are going to be adding a number of data sets and services. One I saw was the Global Climate Observing System Reference Upper Air Network and some new data visualization. Tell us what's happening coming up.
Yeah, Tom, there's an amazing effort to continually update data sets and make them more readily available. You mentioned upper air data set, a reference data set. This is data collected from around the world and brought into our center. We operate, as I said, a world data center for weather, and we also have one for paleoclimate. We have many agreements with many nations so that the data that's collected not only from our country but other countries is stored here and made available to anybody around the world who's interested in taking a look at the data. We often say no bridge is built, no road is traveled, no house is lived in without using weather and climate data affecting many of the engineering standards that we use. But In addition to the upper air data set, we're continually adding to our surface data sets. We'll be doing that. We actually have a international effort with respect to trying to look at the data bank of surface temperatures around the world, for example. Right now, we expect that data bank to be increased substantially in size, literally tens and tens of thousands of stations around the world going back all the way to the 1800s. This is used to analyze global temperature changes. Many other tools and products from satellite data, looking at the latest satellite information. One of our key challenges is to take the satellite information from many different satellites, stitch them together in a way that reflect changes in climate as opposed to different satellite missions. Often when we put up a satellite, it may have a different orbit, may have different measuring capabilities. And if you just looked at the data without trying to stitch them together in a way that made sense, you'd get a very noisy record reflective of changes in the satellite missions as opposed to reflecting what's happening to weather and climate.
We're speaking with Tom Carl. He's director of the National Climatic Data Center, part of NOAA. And just from a customer service standpoint, you have so much information. How do you make it easy for people to use?
Well, that is a key question. Many of the products that we provide today are provided in numerous formats and standards, and we try to make them discoverable through various tools and services. One of the important activities going on in the federal government right now is something called data.gov. And so
it's having its fifth anniversary, I think, this week.
Exactly. It's an effort by the federal government to try and bring together climate data from a variety of agencies in a way that is easier to use. Now, I know we've just started this. We've got a long way to go. But all of our data is being integrated into data.gov. We employ a number of APIs and web services, if that means anything to you, but it's a ways in which people can hook into our data and provide special tools. For example, a major product that we produce by law is something called climate normals. It's something that you probably have noticed if you watch the weather and they say the average high temperature today is supposed to be 72 degrees. That sounds like a very simple statistic. All that data comes from NCDC, but it's used not only for trying to establish what the weather would be for an average high temperature for today or tomorrow, but many of the energy companies are bound by law to use climate normals, particularly heating and cooling degree days, because they're so closely related to the amount of energy we use to heat and cool our homes. And the prices that are set are tied back to heating and cooling degree days when winters are exceptionally cold or summers are exceptionally warm. We provide those statistics, and the state regulators try to ensure that the prices reflect a more even distribution of climate from year to year, as opposed to the large vagaries we see sometimes in weather and climate. So many of those applications, those data sets are made available through web services and APIs. People can now get many of those statistics even on their cell phones through various applications that private sectors write.
And I wanted to ask you about the data center itself, because data centers themselves are pretty big power consumers, and you've got one of the big ones. What are some of the things you're thinking about to maybe reduce the energy consumption of the data center itself as you keep adding services and data?
Well, there's a number of things that we've done to try and ensure we've got the most effective cooling, for example, possible. The ways in which the rows and stacks of our servers and our media down in our computer room are lined up with respect to just simple things. The front of the servers where you can walk and view, are faced along the air conditioning units of the floor vents, so that the back of those units, where the hot air is pumped out, gets pushed up toward the ceiling very quickly. Just a simple reorientation of the rows has made an important difference in the temperature in our computer room. But one of the things that we also do is, because this data is so important, we have other backup facilities. Boulder, Colorado is a backup to us, so that if something were to happen to our facility, a flood or a major disaster, that data would be preserved because Boulder has a copy of all of our data. And we also have backup copies, off-site backup copies, to ensure that, again, if disasters were to happen, we could recreate the data we have.
And just very briefly, explain what your center's role was in this White House report we made reference to earlier.
Well, our center housed something called the Technical Support Unit for the National Climate Assessment. The Technical Support Unit was responsible for a good part of the underlying science documents that were used in the report, responsible for all the graphics and editing you see, and for the accessibility of the document on the web that you see. In addition, we had a number of lead authors from the center who actually wrote the report. I myself chair the U.S. Global Change Research Program, and part of that responsibility, we had overall responsibility for delivering the National Climate Assessment. It's a product of 13 federal agencies, over 300 authors, and a variety of inputs from our advisory committee made up of private sector, university, and non-governmental organization scientists.